The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Could mandatory military service be a possibility for Ireland in the future? Both France and Germany have announced they'd be bringing back some form of military service in response to growing fears of a Russian invasion. The German Defence Chief General Carsten Breuer said we can expect a Russian attack on a NATO country as soon as 2029. So is conscription the answer? And could mandatory military service become the norm in Europe? Well, I'm joined now by Senior Security Lecturer at the University of Bath, former NATO analyst Patrick Bury. We're also joined by former Irish Army officer and columnist with the Irish Examiner, Colin Sheridan. Good morning and welcome to you both. Patrick, we'll go to you first of all. You've written an article, The End of the All-Volunteer Force, or How I Learned to Stop Worrying About Recruitment and Love Selective Conscription. A little echo of Dr. Strangelove in that particular title, Patrick. So good morning. Now, tell us what is happening across Europe. Where is there mandatory conscription and for whom? And where is there a hybrid of some kind?
Yeah, so basically the previous system is called the All-Volunteer Force, and its base really, which came out of the US in the 70s after the Vietnam War, the idea that if you had enough benefits to military service, people would follow market lines essentially and sign up for the adventure, but also for the benefits to military service. And that worked, and it's basically worked on and off and through the wars of choice to different degrees. But what's changing now in Europe, and some of the European countries, for example, Sweden, got rid of national conscription in about 2017, and then brought it back in 3 years later. So what's changed essentially is Russian aggression in Europe. Between 2014, 2015, and then the full-scale invasion of the full whole of Ukraine. And numerous nations, like I mentioned, Sweden brought it back in. Numerous other nations have kept it, like Finland, former, and Sweden being a former neutral state as well. Denmark, Norway, who else are we're speaking here? Yeah. Germany bringing it back in.
I know in Switzerland, everybody has to do a little time in the military. I remember
Switzerland's
driving.
A neutral state, yeah. They've got a kind of a militia kind of view of taking how they basically man their military in terms of using a reserve. So it's on the rise. You've also got, of course, you've got Estonia, you've got the Baltic nations, which have varying degrees of service, which then you go back to your civilian life, but you have a liability as it comes through. So it's increasing is the way to look at it. The only country that's the strongest military power in Europe really at the moment is Poland, and that's still able to use the volunteer force to fulfill. But they have also mooted conscription or national service.
National service, as it used to be called. Now, of course, Poland is on the front line. If Ukraine falls, Poland is next in line. So the question of one NATO country being attacked under Article 5 means everyone should come to its defence. And that's where Germany, France, Italy, Spain might be asked to provide troops in such an eventuality. So that's, I suppose, where the discussions will be most robust in NATO countries which don't have it.
Yeah, I mean, what the Ukraine war has shown us is, you know, the Russians are losing 1,000 casualties a day on a good month, you know, and 50% more of that on a bad, at least, if they're attacking. It's incredibly manpower intensive. And the way that the militaries in Europe are configured for expeditionary warfare with a volunteer force just can't sustain that. And I mean, the question is, and I don't think, you know, if you're talking about, you know, what Germany have brought in, they're basically saying we want to, following the Norwegian model, we want all 18-year-olds to fill out a questionnaire about their propensity to serve. And down the line, we want to do medical checks. This is basically about gathering data. What's the percentage of people that would serve under what conditions potentially, and how many of them would pass a medical? It's usually about 40%. So, that's what you're getting the system in place to, if you needed to rapidly scale to defend your community, essentially.
Yeah.
And I think a smart way to go about it is, look, everyone may need to do something. You don't all have to do the military. That's a much better way of placing this in the minds of the people that may be called upon to do
now, something. Now, is there anything about this particular generation which is less inclined to give the country a dig out in times of trouble. I mean, we've seen an influx of young Ukrainian males into Ireland because either they or their parents don't want to see them sent to the meat grinder that is the front line.
Yeah, and we saw that in Vietnam with the United States and going people going to Canada, for example, as well. I find that decision, as a side, slightly baffling, you know, that Zelensky decided to do that, because I think you're either all in it or you're not. But anyway, that aside, in the UK, I mean, we don't have data from Ireland, but in the UK, yeah, there's a strong and steady move away from the youth, essentially. So we're talking about the 18 to 40 categories or 18 to 24 away from military service. Now, you'd expect that. Firstly, young people are generally more liberal, but it is growing. The gap is still there. But crucially in the UK, and this may map onto Ireland, you know, if you look at even just the breakdown of 18 to 24 year old males, if there was a crisis, there's enough of them that said they would volunteer or they would serve if called up to protect. So we don't have data from Ireland as far as I'm aware, but in the UK, there's a general generational move away. One of the really interesting things, Pat, here is the risk to, if a situation like this happened, the risk to young people because of the social media platforms, and in particular TikTok, controlled by China, etc. like that. So it'd be much more difficult to kind of control the narrative if you left the information space so open as it is in the event of some sort of crisis down the line. And of course, other powers would be using that to stoke tensions.
Now, some people say, looking forward, that the next war will be fought on computers and drones. That's one of my textures. Numbers on the ground will make no difference. Now, the point is, I remember seeing a guy who's manufacturing drones in Ukraine, and he said it will be the battle of the drones, you know, whose drones are best. But at the same time, when you look at what's happening on the ground in Ukraine, there are bodies everywhere.
Absolutely. So drones are really important. It has meant that there's a thinning out of the front lines. Cyber attacks and cyber defense are important. But there's still a lot of people being killed. The Russians are still trying to attack. And as I mentioned, taking 1,000 casualties a day, killed and wounded, you know, a huge amount of amputees. You know, you're talking about over 180,000. So this is a very bloody war. And yeah, drones are a petrifying, if you look at how they're being used, part of that. But they're only one part. The other thing is, don't forget that this will just look like the Ukraine war, as we know, in some sort of front line. Look what else is going on in that Ukraine war. Long-range drone strikes and long-range rocket attacks. And, you know, close to home here in Ireland, like the UK doesn't have an air defence system to speak of. And the Russians have shown they've developed and already using long-range rockets and ballistic missiles. So, you know, you're not a million miles away from a situation where the Russians, in a scenario, would obviously try to isolate the UK off. Ireland would be another part of that from the rest of Europe and NATO. And part of that would be localized strikes, I'm pretty sure you could guarantee. So don't think this is just something that would be over there, is what I'm getting at.
All right.
You know, it has the potential to escalate quite quickly.
And Russia will be no respecter of our neutrality, that's for sure. We'll go to Colin Sheridan. Colin, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Former Irish Army officer, columnist of the Irish Examiner. What is your view of what is going on in Europe, this growing move towards some sort of conscription, be it selective or otherwise?
Yeah, well, as Patrick was saying, I think it's quite obvious that it is a reaction to what is happening in Ukraine with Russia's invasion of Ukraine. And Europe, in particular, probably went through a period post-Afghanistan, post-Iraq, where there was a sort of a move away from this culture of militarization within a lot of the countries that we've mentioned. Some of them have never abandoned it. The Eastern countries, the Nordic countries, especially, like that culture of service has always been there. But certainly for the more Western countries, France, Germany, and the UK, as you've mentioned, young people especially are not engaged in the same way that they would have been with military service. But I do think fundamentally the big issue here, that this is a reaction to Russia's continued aggression in Ukraine.
Yeah, but it's not something in their imagination. It's very real up in the Baltic states. Certainly Finland has a history of having a portion of its territory occupied and taken permanently by Russia. So they know the danger of their neighbour.
Absolutely. And like many of us who served overseas in UN peacekeeping missions in the Middle East and elsewhere, we would have served with the Finnish army, military, with Greece, which also has never abandoned conscription. So we're quite familiar with actually serving with these countries whose militaries have conscription as part of them. And you're absolutely correct, Pat. It's very much part of the fabric, and justifiably so. I would wonder, with as we're discussing this, how it will manifest itself in the likes of France and Germany, where you have a youth, again, that aren't engaged in the same way that they would have been previously, and whether or not, however they do incentivize it. Like, I believe France is bringing in something like €900 a month as an incentive for their voluntary conscription model. It will be interesting to see what the uptake is on that and whether or not the appetite is there for young people to join and serve.
Now, what do you think might be the case here? Is there any case to be made for having some sort of national service, however selective that might be? Now, I know back in the day when you had people, we mentioned Donald Trump before, but with a heel spur, he was able to dodge the prospect of being sent to Vietnam. And many of the well-heeled people in the United States were able to become draft dodgers using their influence. So the idea that, if you like, the working classes would be the cannon fodder if you had a conscription type of arrangement here, those doing higher degrees, for example, getting exemptions, that would not be perceived to be fair, number one. But is there any case for having a national service here?
I think we're quite a ways off, Pat, to be honest. And I think we face much more obvious challenges in the way our defence forces is evolving at the moment. I mean, it's quite well documented that we're under strength at the moment. We have an establishment of around 9,700 people. And I think the latest numbers this year were that we're at a strength of around 7,500. So we still have a huge shortfall, which I don't think a conscription model would solve. I do think, to be fair to the Defence Forces and to the department, that they are trying to address this with a revised recruitment and retention model. And they're spending, I think, a fair amount of their budget on that. And I think that's what needs the very unsexy side of the human resource side of the Defence Forces needs to be fixed first before they went anywhere near anything like conscription. And the other side of that as well is it's quite an escalation to look at a model like that when we're still going through this debate on what our actual neutrality looks like. And to even start discussing something like conscription in this country, given that there's so much uncertainty about where we actually sit internationally, what our foreign affairs policies look like, or are we drifting towards EU militarization, NATO light type missions, etc. So there's a lot of steps there, I think, before we get anywhere near conscription. But the first one is what is hopefully happening, which is the Defence Forces having undertaken a review, actually building up to the strength and establishment that they should be at.
And do you share that German general's concerns that there could be some sort of war with the Russians as early as 2029?
I don't, Pat, and maybe that's just optimism on my part. I know that a French general recently was quoted as well as saying that France needs to be ready for its children to die. That sort of language is obviously speaking to a fear that's out there. I personally feel that it's scaremongering. They would obviously argue otherwise, but I just do not feel, notwithstanding what is happening in Ukraine, that we're on the cusp of this great conflict that many others are suggesting.
I mean, I know there are all sorts of debates about the role of the United States, but if the United States reaffirmed its commitment to NATO and helped to bolster the Ukrainian defense, it would go a long way to pushing that potential threat from Russia back, at least. And maybe when Putin passes on, he thinks he's going to live forever, but he will pass on. When he goes, what will his successor look like?
There's an argument too, Pat, that a lot of what is happening with what's happening in France and Germany, etc., that this is part of the political posturing game that they're showing Russia, that we are, you know, bolstering our defense by introducing these models. And I would hope that a lot of what is happening is just that. It's part of the game of the quid pro quo, if you like, of like, we'll do this just to show you that we're serious about our defense. Obviously, as Patrick has already outlined, there are far more greater concerns about capabilities, you know, whether it's long-range missiles, et cetera, and the cyber threat, which is obviously de rigueur at the moment as well. So I would think that some of this is France, Macron, showing that we have to do something to deter, however soft it may be, and it's just one step in that process.
Colin, thank you very much for joining us. Colin Sheridan, former Irish officer and columnist with the Irish Examiner. And before that, Patrick Bury, senior security lecturer at the University of Bath, former NATO analyst and army officer.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.